I reckon is a term that it almost sounds country to me. I grew up in West Virginia. When people would be talking and you wanted to respond to them, you say, well, I reckon it made you sound country. It made you sound hillbilly. It made you sound out of sorts. And I know that this King James Bible that I'm holding couldn't be written in West Virginia or down in Mississippi where my grandparents come from, where they say, I reckon it's over yonder. I reckon it's across the street. I reckon it's around the store. I reckon, where did this term come from? That the Apostle Paul, who is intelligent beyond human comprehension, would use such a word. Certainly he is not using it as my cousins and my friends did, playing in a schoolyard. For I reckon. What does he mean by reckon? Reckon speaks to reasoning. It speaks to rationale. It speaks to trying to understand. As Marvin Gaye would say, tell me what's going on? What's going on? I have to admit, 2020 has left me scratching what hair I don't have, trying to figure out what is going on. And I struggled with the word reckon, so I had to look it up. And it says logosomai in the Greek, where we get logos. It means in the sense of an account or reckoning. And then I begin to understand that reckoning is not a country term. Reckoning is an accounting term. An accounting term where we reconcile the books. And isn't that what we all want to do with our suffering and with our pain and with our life, is find some kind of way to make sense out of it, to make purpose out of it? If I had to lose my daughter, why? I have to make this pain make sense. There's not one amongst us with a grain of intelligence at all that hasn't spent a moment trying to audit our own lives and try to figure out, why did I have to go through that? Why was I abused at a vulnerable age? Why did my father and mother leave me? Why did I move from house to house? Why did I grow up in foster homes? I wonder why. I reckon means I'm wrestling, trying to reconcile what in the world is going on in my life. I reckon means I'm trying to figure out, why am I dealing with what I'm dealing with like I'm dealing with it when I'm dealing with it? This is not the time for me to be going through pain, and yet I do not always get to pick the moments that I hurt, that I suffer, that I cry, that I wail, that I lose. I don't get to pick the weapons that are used against me, or the rocks that are thrown at me, or the ships that fall apart, or the dogs that attack me. I don't get to pick my own story. I reckon there have been moments in my own life that I had to sit down, get all by myself, get quiet, make everything shut up for a minute and just try to reckon. It is in this moment of deep reflection that we are allowed by the Holy Spirit to hear one of the greatest orators and thinkers of our time grapple with the ideology of, how do I make sense out of life? This is the Apostle Paul trying to figure out, what's it all about, Alfie? What's going on? Tell me what's going on. I reckon. This is the Apostle Paul who tells us that when he went to Asia, he was so overwhelmed that he went into a state of depression and wanted to die. This is not some whimsical upstart motivational speaker who's trying to give us a good feeling. This is somebody who is acquainted with grief and sorrow and injustice and misunderstanding and pain and turmoil of such consequence that when they didn't kill him, he thought about killing himself. For I reckon How did he find the strength to get up when the stones had knocked him down? And how did he find the strength to overcome depression when he felt like caving in and giving up his own life? And how did he find the strength to resist the shame of being laughed at by his own fellow scholars because he dared to believe in Jesus? He was an intellect, and their laughter was more painful than the stones at Lystra. How did he find the courage to go on when everybody was talking about him? It must be hidden, not in his manuscript, not in his preaching, but the audit that goes on in his head when he says, "For I reckon." How you reckon about a thing determines how you deal with it, how you overcome it, how you withstand it, how you persevere. Whatever you reckon determines your direction. Whatever you reckon determines whether you lay there and play dead or get up and fight again. Whatever you reckon determines whether you forgive or whether you spend the rest of your life hating somebody who went on with their life. What are you reckoning with? How are you reconciling the books so that you can have the peace to go forward? A young man who had been with me almost since the inception of my ministry periodically came along down through the years as he followed me. And he would ask me in a private moment, was it worth it? And the question that he asked me, depending on the time that he asked it, elicited a different type of response. Most of the time I responded, I'd love to tell you I responded, oh yes, it was worth it. But for years and years I said, I don't know yet. I'm not sure. I'm still reckoning. If you happen to ask me at a time that I was in great pain or great suffering or great denial, was it worth it? I didn't know how to answer him because I hadn't finished auditing the books. I was still trying to get everything in the right column and make sense out of it. And I was still trying to compute the cost, how much it costs to be me. I wasn't sure it was worth it. I knew he was trying to ask me so he could determine his own life's course, and I was supposed to say, oh yes, it was worth it, but I dropped my head and I said, I'm still thinking about it. The liability of the stage. Was it worth it? The viciousness of people. Was it worth it? The expectations of those who admire you, who put you on pedestals that they could never live up to, and then knock you down for fun. I wasn't sure it was worth it. The inability to be safe amongst your own clergy. I wasn't sure it was worth it. You're never enough. If you go down, you're not low enough. If you go up, you're up too high. I don't know. Was it worth it? I know what I'm doing. Don't judge me. Don't you judge me. Was it worth it? I don't know. I didn't know. I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure. Like you go into the accountant's office and you say, am I good to go? And they're still in the middle of the audit. And I had to tell the young man, I am still in the middle of the audit. I'm 40 and I'm still in the middle of the audit. I'm 45 and I'm still in the middle of the audit. I'm 50 years old and I'm still in the middle of the audit. And some of you out there are going through some things in your life, in your marriage, in your finances, in your company, with your children. And I know you would never tell anybody what you're reckoning, but deep down inside you're wondering, what's it worth it? You roll over at 3 o'clock in the morning. All the rice is gone. The wedding cake is all gone. All the memories and all the cards and all the gifts have now gotten old. And you look at them while they're sleeping. You say, was it worth it? Everybody audits everything. A woman makes love to the man she loves. A passionate embrace, a love, a kiss, an unforgettable experience. It was fantastic. It was special. It was loving. It was kind. It was memorable. I'm trying to be spiritual. It was fantastic. And then she's pregnant. And her body begins to stretch. and her skin begins to tear and leave stretch marks as evidence that will stay with her the rest of her life. And then her water breaks and she goes into labor. And the pain becomes so intense that she sweats and her cheeks fill with air. And as she gets into the birthing position, she is not thinking about the night of passion in the bed, not in the birthing position. And if you ask her at that moment, what happened over here worth what happened over there? She'd say, I don't know, 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 I don't know. I don't know. I remember being in the labor room with my wife, and I was there, and I was right beside her, and I was having a good time, and I was excited because I was going to see the first birth I had ever seen, and I was listening at the machine make the noise, it's telling me when the contractions were coming, and I said, oh, baby, here comes another one, and she turned around and looked at me like I was Adolf Hitler, and she said, I already know, and I decided to be quiet. Because I realized that though I was beside her, I was not her. And that's why people even close to you cannot understand the metrics of your pain, because sometimes they're so enthralled with what they see that they don't understand how you feel. And they're having a good time and you're laying there with your legs strapped down in the birthing position saying, I don't know if you're that cute. I don't know if you're that sexy, that I would do this for almost a year to my body for what you did in a few minutes in my bed. Was it worth it? But when she had finally pushed our child out and they had cleaned her up and laid her in her arms, I saw the smile on her face. And then we knew, as she held the baby and looked at me with tears in her eyes and started praising God and speaking in tongues, it was worth it. It has to be something that's set before you that justifies, that balances the books. It can't just be all pain and no gain. It can't be all sacrifice and no success. There has to be liabilities and assets. Any accountant will tell you that you can't be in business and not have liabilities. If you come to the accountant with your books and all it has is your assets, they'll know you're a liar, because you cannot have assets without liabilities. Show me your liabilities and show me your assets. And when I get through counting up the columns and reckoning the columns one against the other, I will come up with the profit. I will determine what is left. And we serve a God who demands that we always have something left. And some of you haven't got to the something left because you're in the liability stage. And when you're in the liability stage, everything's going out and nothing's coming in, and it looks like God is not fair. But if you stay where you are and endure hardness as a good soldier, after a while, the same soldiers, the same police officers who hit you in the head will escort your body back, because if you hold out long enough, you will rise again undaunted, and the same people who watch you be crucified will watch you be resurrected, and the same people who watch you go down will watch you come back up again. It is that the Apostle Paul talks about. Oh God, I feel the Holy Ghost. It is that he's talking about. For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time, he said, you caught me at a bad moment. This present time is crazy. For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time, I reckon that the mask on our faces and our inability to meet and our inability to touch the people in our own family, I reckon that the pain we endured and the jobs that we lost and the funerals that we had to stand back from the family, I couldn't hug my own members. I reckon that the suffering of the people who stood outside the hospital in the parking lot watching their parents die on FaceTime, the sufferings of this present time is a tough time. It's ripping marriages apart. It's ripping ministries apart. It's ripping businesses apart. The sufferings of this present time is the liability stage. But you cannot have liabilities and not eventually accrue assets. And that's what this text is all about. It's crawling through the liabilities till you get to the assets.